The Lisa Wexler Show podcast is brought to you by Jill Zarin Rugs. Did you know that Jill Zarin Rugs are water-resistant and pet-friendly? Go to jillzarin.com and use the promo code FRIENDOFLISAWEXLER for an additional 10% off. Also brought to you by Onboard Services. For your staffing and engineering needs, go to onboardusa.com.
It's time. Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
And welcome, welcome today. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We have an unbelievable show for you today. And of course, to be an unbelievable show, it means you have to play. You have to be part of it. It has to be your conversation. I mean, listen, I can talk for 2 to 4 hours, not even a problem. But the audience at large, the part of talk radio that makes this such a special kind of a forum, such a special kind of a format, is when you're part of the conversation. So 203-333-9422 is the way to do that. And our telephone number is, you can call me at 203-333-9422. Let me tell you something. That is how I remember the number, okay? Because I struggle. And if I remember the tune, call me at 203-333-9422. That's it. Sticks in my head. I remember the number. I don't have to grope for it. I don't have to find it on a screen. 203-333-9422 is the number. WICC, 7 minutes after the hour. We have on the show today, we're going a little out of the box because we have a guy who is one of the most accomplished, famous children's book illustrators and authors. And his name is Brendan Wenzel, and he's coming to RJ Julia up in Madison, which is one of the great independent bookstores we have in the state. RJ Julia, phenomenal place. And he will be there on October 25th. What is today already? Is it the 23rd? Is that what we are? Are we already October 23rd? I know that it's a Wednesday, but I have trouble focusing on la fecha. It's the 23rd, correct? Is that right, Christian?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, thank you. So in a couple of days, Brendan Wenzel will be there. And I have always been, when my kids were little, I confess to having become a complete and total devotee of children's books for the very first time. No offense to my mom and dad. I love them very much, particularly my mom in this particular case. But nobody read me a book that I can recall growing up. If they did, I don't remember it. But I had my first son, my first child, Jonathan, had colic. And if any of you as a new parent have experienced colic, you know that it makes you want to bang your head against the wall. This was my first baby. I didn't know what to do. Colic is a condition of chronic crying. And no matter what you do, you can't figure out a way to stop it. I think it comes from an immature digestive system. John was born a few weeks early. He was small. He caught up pretty quickly. But I think his insides were not comfortable. And nothing makes you crankier than indigestion. So between the Michelog stuff that I was feeding him all the time, that blue-green crap, and burping him constantly, I didn't know what to do to settle this kid down. And I discovered that reading children's books, even to an infant, I'm talking about even before he can move his head back and forth, I was sitting in that rocking chair with my son, and this lasted years and years because it became our bedtime routine. And so for the first time in my life, I discovered children's books, and I used to go to all these little independent children's books and buy them by the dozens, And I would come home, and I discovered Eric Carle. I discovered what's her name? Margaret Wise Brown. I didn't even know about Goodnight Moon or The Runaway Bunny. But then I became a little mini expert in children's books. So when I tell you that Brendan Wenzel is a truly gifted illustrator, you have to know what I'm saying is true. And you can go online and see it. And he particularly draws birds. And you know that I'm a bird person. I agonize about the fact that we have just discovered that one-third of the world's bird population has disappeared in the last 10 or 20 years. And now, every time I see buildings lit at night, I say to myself, why do we have to light all these buildings at night when people are not in them? Why can't we turn off the lights? Because apparently lit buildings are a reason why hundreds of millions of birds die, because they fly into them at night and it disrupts their migratory patterns. And I'm talking about not skyscrapers. I'm talking about buildings that are only up to 3 stories high. So I'm going to continue with the rest of the show, because otherwise I'll digress on the stories about birds. But we're going to have a great show for you today, because we're also, and I like to do this typically on Wednesdays, we're doing a You Be the Judge. And today's You Be the Judge is, it's must-listen radio, because I'm tying it into, the reason I'm doing this particular case is because of a tragedy. A true tragedy. A couple of days ago, a young man by the name of Peter Greenberg, only 25 years old, was killed as a pedestrian on a side street, Buckley Avenue North in Westport, right off of the Post Road. I know the street well. I've driven on it many times. And I don't know the circumstances, except it was broad daylight during the day. It was not a hit and run. The driver has not yet been identified in news accounts that I can find. But obviously, the driver must be very distraught and very unhappy and very upset. And it prompted me to want to tell you and teach you and learn myself more about what are the ways in which Connecticut, as a matter of law, delineates the rights and responsibilities of pedestrians versus drivers. I know this from my other legal training and background. I have seen negligence cases that surprised me in terms of the outcome because of the laws with respect to the duties of pedestrians in Connecticut. But last week, a case was decided by the Connecticut Supreme Court as a result of a college student at Mitchell College up in New London who was hit by a car. And after a 6-day jury trial, the case was appealed and appealed again. And our Supreme Court rendered a decision on it, and in the decision explained at length the various laws and rights and responsibilities. And all of us at one time or another are pedestrians, and most of us at one time or another are drivers. So it behooves us to pay attention to what the rules are and understand how the law allocates our responsibilities. What are our duties as a pedestrian? Must we walk in a crosswalk, or can we avoid it? And if we avoid it, what does that mean in terms of shifting the responsibility to us on vis-a-vis the driver? And when we are a driver, what are our responsibilities to avoid a pedestrian if they're not in a crosswalk, or if they are in a crosswalk? So we're going to get to that. It's a very important You Be the Judge case, and I think we're going to be doing it in the 11 o'clock hour today. That's when we're going to have a little more time. We also have prizes to give away to you for participating. I don't expect you to get it right or wrong. That's not the point. But in You Be the Judge, it's all about me giving you the facts, and then you coming back and telling me how you think you would have decided it if you were the judge. And I will give you that opportunity to do that. We have a pair of tickets to a concert in Norwalk, Alex Markov. We have a pair of tickets to give away to Judy Collins, A Winter's Story. And we have a couple of other pair of tickets to give away to some other wonderful concerts at the Richfield Playhouse. I want to begin today, in terms of getting to the news, with the very, very important story about what happened yesterday in Capitol Hill. And the Ukraine story has been getting a lot of national news, but I want to put it into focus for us here in Connecticut. And I want to, after reading the testimony, which was held apparently behind closed doors of William Taylor Jr., I want to help sort out what's really going on. Because we in this country right now seem to be really into name-calling. We're into name-calling in public. We're into name-calling in a way that has some people arrested at UConn for ugly, disgusting name-calling. We have the kind of name-calling that has been found on social media that has caused both Democrats and Republicans, with respect to Kathy Osborne, I think, of Sprague, there have been some ugly name callings on Facebook with respect to politicians that have caused politicians on both sides of the aisle to say, cool it and cool down. And we have the ugly name calling in public that emanates from Washington, D.C. in all ways and forms. Today, the fact that President Trump is saying that his impeachment is a, quote, lynching, has caused all kinds of recriminations. It's also caused a statement from Joe Biden to have been dredged up from 1998, where he said the impeachment of Bill Clinton amounted to a sort of a political partisan lynching. And the word lynching should never be used in a political context because it has a very specific meaning. And what it really means is a hanging without due process of law, very often referring to the many, many hangings of black men in the Deep South in connection with crimes for which they were not tried and very often not guilty. And so let's not use words that are so inflammatory, that have such specific, important meanings in English. Let's not use them disposably. You know, they use that a lot of time with the words Holocaust, too. Holocaust has come to be referred to in history as a specific event in which the Nazis intentionally gassed and exterminated over 6 million Jews and also hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of other political prisoners, gay people, people of intellectual disability, communists, people that were deemed enemies to the Third Reich. That was a Holocaust. That's what it was. When we use words that have a specific meaning in ways that are intended to exaggerate what is personally happening to someone, for example, right now, President Trump believes that this entire impeachment is orchestrated. He's calling it a lynching because he feels persecuted. He feels victimized. He feels like it's unfair. He feels like he's being tried in the court of public opinion and not getting his message out in the right way. So we understand that that's the way he feels. He's expressed that many times. But he doesn't need to use the word lynching in order to do it, because that takes away from what the word lynching really means. And we have enough problems in our society, in civics and as citizens, with really understanding the origin of important historical words. There is enough ignorance in this country to go around. And we don't need to be misusing words in order to spread around the ignorance. And that's why when Clarence Thomas referred to his hearings as a public lynching, because he was a black man, and he felt that he was being tried and convicted on an issue of sexual harassment without the benefit of being able to defend himself properly in a court of law. That's why he used the word lynching. Even then, even though it was in a way, if you think about what a lynching is, it was intended to be an analogy. It was an incorrect analogy because nobody was hanging Clarence Thomas from any tree. Nobody was lynching Clarence Thomas for anything. What was being spoken about was whether or not he was fit to serve office as a Supreme Court justice for a lifetime appointment in the United States of America. Far different than so many others who were named and unnamed in the history of the United States who were strung up on a tree for a crime they didn't commit. So let's just get back down to reality. Let's use language for what it is, because language is very powerful. I'm Lisa Wexler, 203-333-9422 on WICC 600 and WICC600.com. Stay tuned because I'm going to explain why the testimony of William Taylor is so critical for all of us to understand.
Don't be out of the loop. Stay connected with the stories that matter. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
As we talk about the power of words, and I will be speaking with you in just a moment about William Taylor and the importance of his testimony and why that testimony may in fact be a very damning piece of what is going on in Capitol Hill vis-a-vis impeachment. We're going to go to the phones for just a bit. Vinny from Stratford. Hi, Vinny. Welcome to the show today. What's on your mind?
Well, I just like to make a comment on your explanation of lynching and what it means to some people. And I think that I agree with the president, because what they've been doing to him is awful. no president in this country has ever been treated the way this president is being treated. And he has every right to use words that make his point.
Well, he may have every right to do so, Vinny, and I understand what you're saying, and that's why I explain. I understand how the president is feeling. He's feeling terribly victimized. But I think when you use an inflammatory word like lynching, you do two things. Number one, you end up derailing the conversation you wanted to have, because now everyone is talking about the word versus really understanding his point of view, that he feels like he's being tried without due process of law, that people are jumping to conclusions without hearing his side. In other words, I think number one, when you use a word like that, it becomes counterproductive. And number two, that's not what lynching means. It's not. What lynching means is a hanging by a tree.
Oh, I understand what it means. I understand very well. Okay. But the idea is that the reason I am thinking that the president used that word is to make people aware of what they're doing to him. They might as well get a noose and hang him.
I see. Okay. I hear what you're saying.
And I think that the way this president is being treated by everyone in this country is shameful.
Well,
absolutely shameful.
He has many supporters who are sticking with him through thick and thin.
Of them.
And tell me, Vinny, tell me why you feel so strongly that this president.
He's the only president that says what people, what normal people like me and many others are thinking, but they will not say it because it is not politically correct.
No, this is part of his huge appeal, Vinny. I agree with you. He has a way of communicating in plain language sentiments that many people have felt for years.
And absolutely. And you know what? And they're too afraid to come out and say it. But he is the only person, the only president in this country that is saying what the people are thinking but are afraid to say it.
And so I hear you, Vinny. I really do. I hear you loud and clear. And let me ask you, Vinny, in terms of what he's saying substantively, what do you agree with? In other words, what about his message do you say, oh, yeah, he's right?
Well, you know, it's are you specifically what he said about lynching?
No, no, whatever's on your mind. Whatever.
As I said, I agree. He's a very unconventional president. And he thinks the way most of the citizens of this country think, and he has done many things that are way better than any other president has done, and yet he gets no credit for anything.
Okay, so
these people that have been elected in Congress, all they've done these almost 3 years, nothing but going after this president. And what did they do for us people that put him in Congress? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So let me ask you this. Let's talk about things that he's done. So are you happy with it? For example, his tax plan. Do you think that was a good one? You liked his tax structure change? You think that was good for America?
I didn't hear the first.
The tax
part.
When he restructured taxes.
Well, I think it has benefited a lot of people.
Okay.
But and some people think that it was more for the upper echelon, the richer people. But it has meant for us, just middle retired citizens, and it was a great help because the first $26,000 is not taxable.
All right. So that was a good thing.
So that for us is a big it's a big thing.
Yeah. And let me ask you, Vinny, with respect to the president's immigration policies, how has that struck you?
I think he is right. These people are coming in. Lisa, let me tell you this. I am a naturalized citizen myself.
Oh, are you really?
Yes,
you don't
I
have
am.
Any accent. Whatever accent you had is gone.
I was born in Italy. Okay. I came to this country when I was 14 years old.
Wow. And you don't have any accent.
Well, thank you.
Wow.
And I became a citizen. I had to wait 5 years before I could apply for citizenship. and I proudly got my citizenship on February 9th, 1959.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank
so
you.
I got to do the math now. So you were 14 then, or you were 19 then?
That's correct.
You were 14 then. Okay,
yes.
Good
and
for you.
People
okay.
that are coming here illegally, they're ruining our country. They are ruining our country, and these people that are running on the Democratic side for president, they want to give the store away.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to pay for it?
Okay. Vinny, how did you make a living? Are you retired now?
I am retired, yes.
Well, how did you know?
I was a secretary for Columbia Records.
Good for you. That's so cool.
while I was going to St. John's Nepomucene School, which it has not been in existence now for decades, I worked part-time at the Burbitt Lumber Company. I used to walk from school to the Burbitt Lumber Company, and I've worked there part-time. And then I worked there full-time after I graduated.
Cool.
And after that, in 1959, I went to work for Columbia Records.
Did you grow up in Connecticut, Vinny?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Wow. And you're staying here, too. I'm so happy that you're here.
Oh, thank you very much. And I love this country. And
I
what
do
they're
too.
Doing to it is shameful. It's disgraceful. And those people in Washington, they should think twice before they open their mouths. Because what they're doing is dividing everybody. They're not doing what they were elected to do for us. And all the past almost 3 years now, all they've done is to go after our president because they hate him that much. Because he's doing things that nobody else has done.
Okay. Well, you know, Vinny,
those
interesting.
Those are my feelings.
I hear you. Listen.
As I said, I'm an immigrant myself.
I hear you.
And I came here legally. My father sent for us.
Yeah.
And these people, they want to get in here and want to have all the benefits. How about our poor citizens that are here, that were born here or naturalized, and they don't get the assistance that they want to give to these illegal aliens?
Okay.
And what the California especially, what they're doing is just lawless. It is just they're fighting against ICE. They're fighting against regulations. They're fighting against the police force. They're fighting against anything that stands that should stand to be the standard.
Well,
for the good
they're fighting against
of the people.
They're fighting against what they think is an unjust and unethical application of the law. That's what they're fighting against. They don't like the fact that if people present themselves, so it is legal to present yourself and say, please grant me asylum, right? It's legal to come to any country's borders and say, please let me in.
Well,
so that's one piece of it, Vinny. Of course, the other piece,
you know,
are people that have snuck in, and that is a different conversation.
Well, there's more of those than there are the legal.
There's a lot of those.
And, you know, it took me 13 days. It was, and I was sick the whole time that I was on that ship. 13 days to get here. From Genoa, Italy.
You remember the trip, huh?
Oh, I certainly do. I was sick the minute I set foot on that ship.
Were you happy to come here at the time?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had my mother and my brother with me, and my sister was here, and with my father. And I remember coming. We came into Newark instead of Ellis Island, but yet my children were so wonderful. They bought a space for my name to be
in
at Ellis Island.
Yeah, we have one for my grandma Helen there,
yes.
too. Yeah.
So, and you, as you can see, Lisa, I am, my blood boils when I hear all these things that they're doing against our president.
Well, I know you speak for a lot of people, Vinny. I know. Listen, I have my quarrel with Donald Trump because I don't, in terms of his policies, strictly his policies, I have a real problem with how he has acted vis-a-vis recognizing the dangers of climate change and trying to head them on. And a lot of what he's done with the Endangered Species Act and the exploitation of national parks and monuments for the benefit of big oil companies have had me greatly upset.
Lisa, speaking of monuments,
yes.
How about of all our historical monuments that have been torn down by these lawless people?
Well, that's another conversation, but I hear where you're coming from, Vinny, and I'm not in favor of that either.
What they've done, they are erasing the history, part of the history of this country.
Well, they're changing it because they don't want, I shouldn't say I'm not, what they don't want to do is perpetuate the, not the worship, but the admiration of people who they feel have a mixed background bag, but I think that that's personally, I think that you have to judge people in the time in which they lived.
Exactly.
And so if we're going to say that Thomas Jefferson was no good because he had slaves, well, it wasn't good that he had slaves, but it doesn't mean he didn't write the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly. Exactly.
I know.
So what they're doing, they're trying to erase part of the history of this country, and it's wrong. Because it's part of it.
All right,
and
Vinny.
Then
well,
we came above everything.
Vinny, I love having you on the show. Feel free to call again. I appreciate your expression.
I certainly will, because I love this country so much that what they're doing to it is disgraceful.
Thank you, Vinny. Thanks
You're
for the call.
You're very welcome, Lisa, and have a good day.
You too.
Okay.
That's
bye-bye
Vinny
now.
From Stratford on the Lisa Wexler Show. And your opinion is welcome as well at 203-333-9422. Next up, we're going to have a conversation with a very talented, really magnificent children's book author and illustrator. I'm going to hear a little bit about the world of artistry and how he makes it come to life. He'll be at RJ Julia in Madison in a couple of days. So stick around. We'll take the conversation away from politics for just a bit on the Lisa Wexler Show at WICC 600.
On air, WICC 600. Online at WICC600.com. Download the WICC 600 app and Alexa skills. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. I'm so delighted to introduce our guest, Brendan Wenzel. Brendan is a children's book illustrator and author. He's won a lot of prizes for his beautiful work, which feel free to go see it online, W-E-N-Z-E-L. And he loves to draw birds, and you know me with birds. He's going to be appearing at RJ Julia, the marvelous independent bookstore in Madison, on Friday, October 25th, just in a couple of days at 6 p.m. And he'll be talking about his latest. Brendan, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show. Hi.
Lisa, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure, pleasure. I'm a devotee of fabulous children's books, and I'm going to tell you a secret. So I don't know how much of a secret it is, but when before I had children of my own, I used to work at a law firm in the city, and and it was very weird. You know how you meet people, and you talk to people, and you find out things? So I met this gal. And it turned out she was the librarian at the law firm. So I was a very hotsy-totsy Wall Street law firm, Brendan. And
okay.
and the library was a big deal. And we had a full-time librarian just for us at the law firm.
Yeah, wonderful.
It was wonderful. And it turned out that the librarian was part of an elite group of people that used to review children's books for the New York Times Children's Book Review section.
Yes, yeah.
And she invited me to join the group.
Well, one of the wonderful things about this job is I get to hang out with librarians all the time, and I will tell you they are some of the most fantastic people across the board.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such internal integrity librarians have. You know, they're the only people.
Well, yeah.
They're the only people that got the Patriot Act changed when that was passed because they refused to divulge what books people wanted to look up in the library. It's too bad that they aren't the gatekeepers of the browsers of Google today.
Right? Absolutely. Well said.
Right? The world would be a much better place. But anyway, so that's how I first got to know children's books. And then when I had a baby of my own with colic, all I did all day long was just live at children's bookstores to think, you know, what can I read today so that he won't cry?
What are some of your favorites?
Well, I loved Eric Carle, Brendan.
I must tell you.
You know, what was it? Spot, right? The original Spot. And all of the, so the Eric Carle books, the original spot books had tabs in them. And so as your little one was first grabby and learning how to grab stuff, you could make reading an interactive game because he would grab a tab and open it and, you know, like a pop-up, and out would pop another illustration.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
But my one of my favorites was Brown Bear, Brown Bear, What Do You See?
It's such a brilliant book.
I see a red bird looking at me, because it was poetry. It is poetry.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And his illustrations were just revolutionary. I mean, it's amazing. I probably weekly get out a few Eric Carle books and look through them, and it's just, I've never ceased to be amazed.
Right? They're incredible. And so, I discovered Goodnight Moon. Personally, I like The Runaway Rabbit better. The Runaway Bunny. Okay. The Runaway Bunny better.
All right.
I did. I thought it, I don't know. I just liked it better. I loved A.A. Milne, all the Winnie the Pooh, the original Now We Are. Oh, my God. I'm forgetting my titles. But Jonathan Joe Has a Mouth Like an O. You know, all of the stories that were said in poems. And I love poetry to kids. I love the rhythm and the rhyme of poetry and the magnificent illustrations. I'm telling you, I had probably 2,000 children's books by the time Jonathan was five.
Wow.
No,
good on you. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah.
Isn't it fantastic reading poetry with children?
Oh.
They really just zero in a way that is, I mean, they're present in a way that I don't know if adults have even the capability of being anymore.
That's right. Including Mother Goose, by the way. Mother Goose. All of them. So Brendan, I was looking through your beautiful books, and you draw birds magnificently. I've got a thing about birds.
Do you? Are you a bird watcher?
Yes, but very amateur. I just look up all the time.
Okay.
I just look up all the time. I pay attention all the time to birds. I'm very distressed about the plight of all the birds that die as they bump into buildings at night.
Yes, it's really awful.
Really terrible. And, and I love cats. But I discovered from a listener to this show who called in to say that there's a certain kind of collar you can buy your cat. It's not a bell. It was something else. And it deters the cat can't catch the bird. It's not a bell. It's something else. I have to find what it is. I posted it on my website. This is what happens. I'm getting a little bit of holes in the brain. Just a little bit.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because the first book that I wrote in Illustrator was called They All Saw a Cat, and the cat in that book is wearing a bell. And I don't know if I've talked about this before, but one of kind of my secret goals behind the scenes was to, put a bell on this cat in the hopes that if the book took off, maybe more people would start to bell their cats, which is, really, really wonderful for, keeping songbirds safe.
It is, but it's not the optimum way. There's a better way, and there's a better website. And what I'll do is I'm going to find it. You know what, Ava, I need you to go on my Facebook right now and find the post in which I posted about how you can put a collar on your cat to prevent the cat from getting birds. And will you find that and get me the product? We have a wonderful intern with us today. Ava, go ahead and do that. That's your assignment.
Wonderful.
All right, Brendan, so tell me a little bit about how stories come to you as an author and your process and what you want to accomplish in a book and all of that.
Oh, wow. That's a huge question.
I know.
So I think a lot of, I was an illustrator before I was a writer. So I illustrated a few books before started putting words down as well. And, pictures have always come a lot easier to me than words. And so I think when I first started writing, that was a process of trying to kind of express myself visually and then kind of reacting to those images. And it took me a really, really long time to figure out how I wanted to tell stories. The early kind of book dummies that I would create would have, one image on a page and then just paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of text. And one of the really nice things about making picture books is that kind of interplay between the words and the pictures. And you can kind of bounce them off each other and play with that interaction. And it really, really creates the potential for an entirely different kind of storytelling. So eventually I zeroed in on the fact that I really love these picture books that have very few words, about these, very bright, large images that are sort of kind of dancing with those words in an interesting way. So that sort of that sort of is those are kind of the stories that I'm interested in sort of exploring at this point.
And have you been asked to illustrate other books that you're not the author of the story, but people love your drawing so much they want you to draw for them?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to work on a few people's, a few other authors' books. And, you know, both really provide an interesting challenge. You know, with a book that I write and illustrate, it's always fun because, you know, it's my kind of like, you know, from top to tail, like it is my, it's my idea. It's something that I'm exploring. And so that provides a lot of, you know, fun opportunities to explore. But with someone else's book, you're kind of being asked to step into their world. And it feels like every manuscript or every text is like, really wants to be something specific. So a large part of the process for me illustrating someone else's book is trying to figure out a way to kind of step into their world and figure out what that book kind of wants to be.
Yeah, I understand that. And did you learn how to draw very young? Did you always have an aptitude for that? When did you discover your talent, Brendan?
Yeah, so my my parents are actually both artists. My dad is an illustrator as well. His name is David T. Wenzel. He's probably best known for the graphic novel adaptation of The Hobbit, which he was working
on
my entire childhood. Yeah, it's beautiful. I highly recommend checking it out. And then my mom, Janice, was a wonderful art teacher for 25 years and is hands down like the most talented member of our family. She's an incredible painter
as well. All right, so it's in the genes. It's in the genes.
Well, you know what? I mean, I feel very blessed that I think there certainly was probably some aptitude there. But I also, you know, every time I talk to young people who want to be authors and illustrators, I try to remind them, you know, this is, you know, drawing. There's no bad drawings. Like everybody, if like everyone.
Brendan, that's
planet,
not true.
No, I think
that's not true.
Can I make my case?
You can make your case.
So if we also imagine everyone on the planet like drew the same subject matter, everyone is going to draw that one thing in their own like their own unique way. And some of them may be like they're maybe like kind of like funny looking drawings and they may be out of proportion, but everyone's going to kind of reveal something else about that subject matter that no one else could besides them. You know, they're their own kind of like, they're their own machine for kind of processing this on. So,
well, that's true.
And mechanical, but
well,
yeah,
if you look at art as an extension of what someone is thinking or feeling, then you're right. There are no bad drawings. It's just an insight. It's just insight, right? There is, but then how do we determine what belongs in museums, Brendan? How do we do that?
Oh, well, now I'm on my back foot. I have no good answer for that.
Right?
Question.
I mean, it's an age-old question, right? Someone looks at a Jackson Pollock and they're like, "Well, I could have thrown the paint there." I mean, like, what's the big deal? And then somebody else says, "Oh no, you're missing. You're missing something very profound here. This is a profound expression of the human whatever." So
absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, there's probably a thousand great picture books in that conversation. You know what I mean? I think that could run to many different places, and it's really interesting, and I love Jackson Pollock. So.
Yeah, well, exactly. And there's room to love so many different kinds of illustrations. Yours are bright and beautiful and clear and lovely. And when you're drawing a bird, do you take a photo of a bird and then enhance it in an artistic way, you know, sort of the way that, in other words, do you take what I might have as a photograph instead of me who would try and replicate and draw it, you take it and you exaggerate it into something else?
Yeah, absolutely. And it took me a while to figure out how that process would work for me. I always loved artwork, especially picture books, that sort of played with the character of animals. Some of my favorite books are books that, you know, present animals as, you know, individuals and having personalities, but also not necessarily personifying them and making them human. So they're really, really kind of walking that line and acknowledging that they have emotions and feelings, but they may not be, you know, the same as the emotions and feelings that we're having.
You remind me of, Brendan. I don't mean to interrupt, but I know who your illustrations remind me of.
Who's this?
Leo Leone.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites.
Right?
Absolutely.
Can you see why I make the connection?
Oh, yes. It's a great compliment. I mean, Leo Leone is one of my favorite illustrators of all time. So thank you.
Tilly and the Wall is one of the great children's books of all time.
Absolutely, and Frederick, Swimmy. I mean, it's just like every book is beautiful.
Yeah, but Tilly and the Wall tells the story of how two separate mouse populations or whatever they are, animal populations. Each of them live in their own world and there's a wall separating them.
Yeah.
And they think that the people or the animals on the other side of the wall are so different and weird from them until Tilly decides that she has to climb the wall. And when she gets on the other side of the wall, she realizes everybody looks like her.
Isn't it perfect?
Oh, my. It's such a wonderful children's story.
Yeah. I'm so glad you mentioned that book. Everyone should go out and get that book and check it out.
All right, Brenda, but we want them to get your books, too. So tell us about your books, and what are you going to be doing on Friday at RJ Julia?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I will actually be at RJ Julia on Thursday and Friday. I'll be at the Wesleyan branch on Thursday and the Madison branch on Friday. I think that's correct.
Marvelous.
And I'll be there talking about my new book, which is called A Stone Sat Still. And A Stone Sat Still is a book about perspective. It's actually the follow-up to the book I mentioned before, They All Saw a Cat. And so where They All Saw a Cat explores how various creatures see the same subject matter, being a cat, A Stone Sat Still is about place and how many creatures come to this one place and all have their own, you know, unique experience and how a number of factors kind of affect how they see that one specific location.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I always think that's true about a tree. Right? I mean, a tree is a home for squirrels and birds and da-da-da. But I love that you took a stone because what we think of as an inanimate object provides shelter and habitat and just whatever else it does in the world of planet Earth. So I thought it was very beautiful.
That's why I really appreciate that. And I think, you know, when I was first considering books about, you know, perspective and the perfect location, a tree had popped into my mind at one point. But, you know, there are so many wonderful tree books out there.
There are, yeah.
And I liked the idea of taking this object that everyone would walk by on a day-to-day basis and trying to kind of maybe infuse a bit of excitement or dare I say, magic kind of into that sort of like, that inanimate object.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Brendan Wenzel, and good luck to you in your career. And it's wonderful to experience and enjoy your books and illustrations. Keep doing what you're doing. You're going to be, as you said, as RJ Julia in Wesleyan on Thursday and in Madison, I know, at 6 p.m. And so people should go out and see you and enjoy what you're doing or buy their books for their kids or whatever they're doing. Congratulations.
Lisa, thank you so much for having me, and it's always great to talk to a fellow birder.
A fellow birder and a fellow children's book lover. What can I say? Absolutely.
Exactly.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure. The Lisa Wexler Show coming up. Lots more news you may have missed. Before we get to that, listen, I found the collar. I meant to tell Brendan. I found the collar that you can put on your cat in order to prevent your cat from getting birds. And it's from a company called Birds Be Safe. And it's not a bell. It is a brightly colored cat collar because birds will avoid bright colors. So when your cat is wearing a bright red collar, these kind of collars that they sell, they're in bright patterns, birds will see that and they will fly away. And so your cat will be frustrated, but that's okay. 203-333-9422. More of the Lisa Wexler Show coming right up. And it's 6 minutes before the hour. 203-333-9422. A couple of headlines before we get to the top of the hour. And we're going to get a little bit elbow in to what's happening in the impeachment hearings. And then we have a fabulous You Be the Judge. But a pair of ice rinks in New York City Central Park, which have been known as the Trump ice rinks forever since Donald Trump came to the rescue many, many years ago and said, what the New York City bureaucrats can't do, I can do. Remember that? Remember when we had the wool something, what the heck was it called? Something with a W, a skating rink in the middle of Central Park, and it was in disuse forever, and the New York Post and the Daily News got a hold of these headlines, and they said, our mayor can't even get us a skating rink in Central Park. Do you remember this? And then Donald Trump said, what they can't do, I can do, and I will do. And ever since then, they've been known as the Trump skating rinks, particularly the one in Central Park. Well, now those rinks no longer have Trump's name on them. The Washington Post reports it's the first time that since Trump took office, that his own businesses appear to be downplaying their connection to him. It's a complete rebranding, said Jeffrey Croft of the watchdog group New York City Park Advocates. They've taken the name off everything, off the uniforms, everything. The name Trump has been removed from boards around each rink, where big red Trump signs surrounded skaters in previous years. White tarp is being used to hide the Trump name at the desk where visitors rent skates. One employee told the Post the change was made because the Trump branding has been driving away customers, saying, quote, it was hurting business. A lot of the schools, you know, liberal private schools up here come to parties up here, and they did not want to see the Trump name. Now, the Washington Post isn't quite correct because there has been an effort by a bunch of condominiums that had been managed and originally developed by the Trump organization to take the Donald Trump's name off of those. And if you drive down the West Side Highway on Riverside Drive, what you used to see was a phalanx, big word, of all the Trump condos, one after another, right on the Hudson River. And in some places now you see where the letters were taken off. So the Trump branding in New York City is not what it used to be. That is for sure. The West Point cadet who went missing with a rifle last Friday was found dead, according to West Point. They announced on Facebook the body of Cade Carita, 20 years old, was found last night. Carita went missing along with an M4 rifle. The search began after he failed to show up for a military skills competition Friday evening. Lieutenant General Darrell Williams of West Point said, we are grieving this loss, and our thoughts and prayers go out to Cadet Carita's family and friends. This is just a terrible, heartbreaking, sad thing when you think about the extraordinary accomplishments and potential of anybody at West Point Military Academy, the kind of internal suffering that must have been going on in this young man's head, and that for whatever reason the signs were not seen. So he had access, opportunity, and internal motivation, and apparently it seems as if he took his own life. Terrible story. And this is another horrid story. This one makes my stomach sick and sick and sicker. Have you heard about this 3-year-old Alabama girl? She was abducted from her own birthday party nearly 2 weeks ago. This was the most horrible story that you can imagine. Birmingham police in Alabama have been looking for her for these past 2 weeks, and they have announced that they have located the remains of a 3-year-old child who we believe to be Camille Cupcake McKinney. Her remains were found inside of a dumpster, and they were recovered inside a landfill here in Birmingham. Patrick Stallworth and Derek Arisha Brown face charges of capital murder and kidnapping in connection with her death. I mean, it's such a horrific thing. I hope this message is not lost to young mothers, to grandmothers, and the entire Birmingham community. It only takes a split second. We can no longer assume that everyone is a part of the village trying to raise a child. I mean, really. Taken away from her own birthday party, and apparently the police think they know who did it. Can't even handle it. A 3-year-old girl in Alabama. Chinese state television refused to air the NBA's season opening games Wednesday. So they are asserting that they don't really care that the NBA tried to make up. China's central television holds exclusive rights for the NBA. They chose not to air the game between the Toronto Raptors and the New Orleans Pelicans. The second game of the day between the Lakers and the Clippers was also not broadcast. Instead, they chose to air the World Military Games. Isn't that wonderful? Aren't you happy, NBA, that you capitulated to China? Aren't you happy to make nice to them? I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll be back in the next hour with more of the Lisa Wexler Show here on WICC 600. Stay tuned.